Thank you, Ken. He remembered my name, by God. Grateful to be invited anywhere. Most of us feel that way when anybody invites us. They didn't used to invite us, remember? Whatever you do, don't come to the party. You know. I'd say, why? Then they'd tell me. Oh. Weren't you? I don't know if your life was like mine. Most of my life is hearsay. I spent most of my life saying, I did? Oh, I'm sorry. And until I married my wife, then it became hearsay. I was born into an alcoholic family. Oh, no, yeah, really. Probably nobody else here is like that. My mother died of alcoholism when she was 43 years old. She was on Skid Row in Los Angeles, and in a drunken stupor, she fell down a flight of stairs and broke her neck. And on her death certificate, it says accidental fall. See, they don't even know the ways we die, do they? They have no idea of all the ways we die. And my father made it to like 61 before it killed him. And my aunts and my uncles all died of alcoholism. My grandparents all died of alcoholism. My sister died of alcoholism. I'm the only one left. And I went to the A&A. And that's why I'm alive. If anybody who can read in the last 15 or 20 years knows that alcoholism, there's genetics involved with alcoholism, like many other diseases. The scientists say it's a predestination. It's supposed to be a recessive gene, you know. But in my family, it's a dominant gene. It's a little blue gene down at the end of the chromosome going, hey, hey. Only has one thing to say, one more! You know? And I remember, being raised in that zoo, in that alcoholic zoo. Probably a lot of you identify here, you know, with the bodies flying and crashing. Just get under the goddamn bed and hope they don't see you, you know? And I remember lying under that bed and saying, I'll never be like them. And I wasn't, you know, until I drank. And I, if you're new and you think you don't need these steps, you don't need this program, I'll tell you. I went 15 years one time without any steps or anything, and it was horrible. But then when I turned 16, this other little weedy and I were going to this high school dance in Bakersfield, California, and we had a half a pint of 10 high. Why we got it, I haven't the foggiest idea. Where we got it, I don't remember. We had this big quart of party pack. Is anybody old enough to remember party pack? And I gagged down my half of the half pint. And I mean literally, I gagged. Remember that when you first start drinking? You swallow it 8 times. Yeah. Anybody in their right mind go, oh, screw this. But I kept it down. And it did its magic. And I went to that high school dance. And I had the best time I ever had in my life. I was 4'11". Weighed 89 pounds, 12 pounds of that was pimples, and, there were only 2 girls at a school I could dance with, you know, they were small enough, but not that night, baby. That night I danced with all of them, and come on, baby, let's go. I didn't care where my face was. And, I did a lot of that bumping that night, too, that, hey, watch where you're going. Remember that? I was always a real macho drinker. Hey, watch ya, you know. I bruised several guys' knees that night, and couldn't wait to do it again. Couldn't wait to do it again. 3 weeks later, I got a chance to drink again. Was going to go to some beach party up by the Kern River up there above Bakersfield, and some guy got me a bottle of port wine. A fifth of port wine, and I drank it all. I figured if that half a pint would do it, a fifth of port wine would do it even better. And it did. And I had the first of those blackouts, you know. I hated blackouts, didn't you? I never had a good blackout. I never woke up in the morning and felt I'd helped the little sisters of the poor that night or something, you know. I mean, there was always blood, you know, mine. And that night, they tell me, you know, I did. Oh, really? They told me that I tried to whip every guy at this beach party, and they'd all just kick hell out of me. And I tried a couple of the smaller girls, and they whipped me, too. And later that night, I tried a deputy sheriff. Hence, when I woke up the next morning, I was in jail, Kern County Jail, not a juvenile, you know, 16 years old, beaten beyond recognition. Somebody had puked on my chest. And, you know, I never caught that guy. If I ever find that SOB. Anyway, you know, they're rattling their bars. You know how they wake up. A lot of guys' heads going, yeah. And I opened my eyes. Can you imagine the terror? I remember I was lying there, you know, the blood and the lips all swollen, one eye shut, and, you know, my teeth had gone through most of my lip. And I remember lying there all beaten and said, I'll never do that again. I never drank port wine again as long as I drink. You know? And if you dozed off, you pretty much missed my drunk-a-log. That's pretty much how I drank most of my life. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of times I drank and I had fun. I mean, I love to say that in AA meeting. All their eyes glaze over. They all go, you know, yeah. You are the only people in the world that know what I'm talking about. You know? Fun. Oh, don't say that in an Al-Anon meeting. Oh, no. That pisses them off. They don't like fun. They have fun. But you guys know what I mean, you know. Fun. Getting beaten to a pulp and go to jail. Fun. Find your car at the bottom of a ravine in the morning. Remember that? With you in it. I almost died of it. One more good time, you'd had a different speaker tonight. Because I could not resist it, you know. And that's the way I drank. I had all the fun. Then I'd have those damn blackouts and be all beaten up or go to jail and wreck cars. All that nonsense you know about. But somewhere along the line, I got a college education and became a school teacher. Guy commits felonies in blackouts, becomes a school teacher. Just a hobby. So then, by the way, I met my wife, my present wife. We've been married 52 years, but I still call her my present wife. Keep her on her toes. I met her in college, San Jose State College. She was down on Skid Row looking for an alcoholic to abuse her. And you're looking to be abused. You got your boy here, I'll guarantee you. And we entered this 20-year suicide pact together, and we had that horrible dual disease. I don't know if any of you had it, but a terrible dual disease. Alcoholism and Catholicism. And consequently, we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes. You know? That's what it seemed like to me. Every time I came out of a blackout, the hell is that? And they're all right when they're little like kittens, but they grow. We had five of them, and the older they got, the goofier they got, and God knows the goofier she got, and I was the head nut. We moved to Oceanside in 1961, and I taught all my career there in Oceanside, I was if it's not a ridiculous thing to say, a successful school teacher. kind of an oxymoron. I was a very good teacher, and I loved teaching. And, you know, I got so paranoid about those blackouts. I got so terrified about having a blackout that I relatively quit having them. Well, if you can't get real drunk once in a while, what I did is I got drunk every day a little bit. I drank every day the last, say, 10, 12 years of my drinking. I had to drink every day. It was necessary for me to drink in order to survive. I came to AA the first time. Ooh, time flies when you're having fun. I came to AA the first time in 1965. Most of you weren't born, I know. But I was a surfer dude in those days. This other surfer dude and I got this surfboard shop down at the beach there in Oceanside. Guy donated this little building to us. It had been a bar and was all vandalized. He was just sitting on the property, you know, to get rich, which he did. But anyway, we fixed this building up for this surf shop we were going to open and put windows in and painted it and got a refrigerator. 4 or 5 months later, we got some surfboards, too. And we had this chaise lounge chairs, two of them. Right, on the beach. I mean, on the water. Right at the end of the strand there in Oceanside, if you've ever been there. And we became sunset connoisseurs, Woody and I. We used to measure sunsets by martinis. I used to say, looks like about an 8 tonight, Woody. Oh, the best one we ever had was a 15 martini sunset. Oh, you should. It was glorious. And the sun and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. You remember that? You remember that, huh? I think that ought to be on the 20 questions. Yeah? You ever had a sunburned mouth? No, get the hell out of here. You're not ready yet. I talked to this guy down in Texas, old Bill B down in Texas. He's done 20 questions. He wants to put, have you ever been run over by your own car while you were driving it? I've done that twice. You know? But I went down in February of 1965, I went down to the shop to repair a board. Of course, it was winter, cold, we weren't open, and it was Sunday morning, and I had a hangover. Oh, really? Yes, honest. And I was so thirsty, and I went to the refrigerator to see if there's Coke or something there, and Woody had been there the night before, and he'd left about this much vodka in a half-pint bottle. Just, my old man would have called it a lick and a smell, you know, just a taste. And there's some orange juice in there, and I thought, oh, that'll put the fire out. So I just mixed up that little drink, probably half a shot of vodka, and I drank it. And I'm saying this, you new guys, welcome. God, I hope you find here what I found here. I hope you stay here long enough till it happens to you. I'm glad you're here. That's the reason we came. You know, when I was had been talking a while, I said to my old sponsor, my late sponsor, Bill, God, I might have said the same damn story. He said, tell him your story and talk to the newcomer and shut up. He said, shut up to be a lot. And anyway, that little bit of vodka just kind of like got in my system. You know how it'll do? And went around my system. Then it went. And about 20 minutes later, see, my mind talked to me. My mind said, shame on you, Cliff. That was Woody's booze you drank. Why don't you go up to the liquor store and get Woody a pint? That's the kind of guy I am, I'm telling you. That afternoon, I got Woody a fifth. And I ended up just falling down, stupid drunk, resin all over me. The board was screwed forever. The shop was a mess. Crawled home on my hands and knees. 11 blocks on my hands and knees. And the next morning, got up sick and puking and said to my wife, I got to do something about my drinking. I'm getting drunk when I don't even mean to. And she'd cut this little thing out of the paper about the Alcoholics Anonymous. She had one of those pre-Al-Anon ticks in her eye. And it said, if you want to drink, that's your business. If you want to quit, call Alcoholics Anonymous. Only ad we've ever had. And I love it. I think it's perfect, don't you? It's perfect. We're not a treatment center. We're not a goodwill society. We're not even very nice people. But if you want to quit drinking, there's people in this room that'll go to the ends of the earth for you if you want to quit. If you'd rather drink, have at it, pal. I could care less. But if you want to quit, we're here. And so I went to the A&A, And after a couple of meetings, I realized I'd made a grievous error in judgment. I'm highly educated, you know. I have degrees, you know. And these people seem to have the collective IQ of an orange. I tried to help them. You've done that too, have you? Yeah. I was laying a little Nietzsche on him about the third night, and this guy said, "Hey, we keep it simple here." I said, "No shit." You could have fooled me, Hiram. So I quit AA. Really hurt him. And for the next 5 years, I was an AA loser. And I want to be sure, if you're new here tonight, or you're dropping by tonight, or if one of your cards is in the basket tonight, it's very easy to be an AA loser. And I was a loser for 5 years. I used to drink for like 2 years and then come to AA for 30 days and then drink for a year and a half and come to AA for 40 days and sit there and smirk. I had the loser sneer. I love to go to jails and stuff, you know. Tell them your story and they're sitting there. They're locked up. Or they got wristbands on. They're going, I always want to say, "I'm going home, jerk." You know? But they don't let you do that. But I was a real, you know, because I was overeducated, pompous jerk. One time I came in the afternoon about 4 o'clock, and these guys quadro-stepped me. You ever been quadro-stepped? They just got on all four sides of me, these four guys. Just woo, woo, woo. Oh, I got the message that day. I levitated out of the building, as a matter of fact. I went over to my buddy Big John's house and pounded on the door, and John came to the door, and I said, "John, we're alcoholics and we have to go to AA." Big John said, "Oh, okay." Just missed it by 3 weeks. And he was a great big guy. Led him to the meeting that night and became his sponsor. And the next day, we both got drunk. And that's how I treated AA. Boy, I was a loser's loser. If they ever have a loser's hall of fame, I'll have a plaque right by the door. And I almost died of alcoholism, probably many of you in this room almost died of alcoholism, because I was a functioning alcoholic. My old man told me, if you eat breakfast and go to work, you're not an alcoholic. He never said a word about puking breakfast back up. You know what I mean? So I got up every day, and I'm a functioning alcoholic. I do the job, and I do it better than you. I do it better than anybody. I'm a goer and a doer and an achiever. I'm a functioning alcoholic. My buddy at home says a functioning alcoholic is one whose wife works. Don't tell that one in an Al-Anon meeting either. Makes him go. You married guys, you remember that? "Don't you think you had a few too many?" Just say, "You had a few too few. That's your problem, Lynn." And mine was a counter. Oh, she'd drive me crazy with accounting. "That's your fifth one today." "Just shut up and eat your breakfast, will you? Leave me alone." And so I always functioned out there in society, and I was dying of alcohol. We die, you know, we die of cirrhosis of the liver. We die of a bad heart from over-drinking. We die from automobile accidents a lot. We die, we fall down a flight of stairs in a drunken stupor and break our neck. We die a lot of ways. And most of us that die, the experts, whoever the hell they are, say that 95 to 97% of us that die of the disease of alcoholism are functioning alcoholics like me. Only 3 to 5% of us on Skid Row dying. And they can watch them die. And I just had kids and a wife, people watching me die. And I was the week I came to Alcoholics Anonymous this time, I weighed 165 pounds. I had 4% body fat. I used to surf for like 3 hours and then get out and run 5 miles. I could bench press 285. Took me 25 minutes to pass a mirror. My daughters used to get money from me all the time. You know, I wouldn't have a shirt on most of the time. They'd run up and they'd say, "Oh, Daddy, V up, V up." They go, "Oh, can I have $10? "Yeah, sure, you know." I was sober 2 years before I figured that out. So as you can see, AA is maybe twice the man I used to be. But I was in shape. My liver was gone, but I was in shape. I was one of the top three debate coaches in the United States. That's like being one of the top three prostitutes in Elko, Nevada. You know, apologies to any prostitutes here. Or former prostitutes. I became one of the top speech coaches by accident. The principal wanted me to take these kids down to a debate tournament. I didn't know a damn thing about it. So I took these kids down to this debate tournament. And we got down there. It was a big deal. There were 50 schools and 500 contestants. And we got slaughtered. And I don't care for losing. And I went in the coach's room and they all snubbed me because I was the newcomer. Except for this gray-haired creep with a $1,000 suit on, finally in the afternoon. He said, "Where are you from?" He was the first one that had spoken to me. I said, "Oh, I'm from Oceanside." And he looked at me and said, "Oh, where's that?" 40 miles up the road. "Where's that?" I know what kind of drunk you are, but he gave me a resentment. I mean, a resentment! And I went back to Oceanside High, and I built a speech team. Took me 4 or 5 years, but I built a juggernaut speech team is what I did. And I did it with sheer hatred. I mean, I'm in their face from 7 in the morning till 9:30 at night. I'm in people's faces screaming and yelling and cursing, "Coaching!" And the guy next door said, "I'd love to watch them leaving your room wiping the spit off their glasses." You know? This reporter said to my captain, "What's the secret of your coach's success?" The kid said, "Terror." And then I'd go home at night and get drunk, and I'm a violent drunk, and I'm a critical, sarcastic, mean drunk. And I got drunk the last 6 or 7 years every night at home. And I turned our house into an insane asylum. Everybody in that house was crazy. We're talking the late 60s now. 3 of my kids are in high school in the late 60s. My oldest son is working his way through high school as a hashish salesman. You should have seen. He had hair down to his butt, you know. Head went like this all the time. Called his mother, "Man. Hey, man, what's for dinner?" Oh, he was a pip, that guy. He took a lot of LSD. He loved LSD. And he used to scare the hell out of me. You know, I'd be in the middle of a sentence, he'd say, "What was that?" Of course, the shape I was in, I'd try to know, "What? What was it? Where? What?" You know? And we're all crazy, and everybody hates everybody, and it's a nut house, but I built that speech team. After a couple of years, we won one of those speech tournaments. But I didn't say anything to the gray-haired guy. It wasn't time yet. We know when it's time, don't we? I think revenge is better than Christmas. The next year, we won all the tournaments. All 14 of them. First place in all of them. The next year, there was a tournament. There were 25 schools competing in the tournament. My teams scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to the gray-haired guy. Remember him? Put my nose right against his, and I said, "Do you know where Oceanside is now?" He just looked blank. He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Don't you remember 4 or 5 years ago, you said to me, 'Oceanside, where's that?'" He said, "We just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was." The story of my goddamn life. 4 years, this guy's in bed every night. I'm up at Oceanside. "I'll get you!" He didn't know it. And right after that, my wife and I had one of our main events, which the neighbors have come to miss so much. Our neighbors never got television until after I got sober. They didn't need it. You know what I mean? They all had those Venetian blind marks on their forehead, you know, from last night. And I threatened to move out, and everybody said, yeah, go for it, Dad. You know? So I moved down to the beach with my surfboard where I wanted to live anyway. And I had said for years, if I get rid of that witch and those long-haired dope fiend children, I'll be okay, you know. And I'd gotten rid of them, and it wasn't okay. I was drunk all the time. I was missing work, which I had never done. And one afternoon, I hadn't had a drink yet, and I went by the house to harangue my wife about money, and the hashy seal was kind of bobbing in the background there, and humming a tune from the planet Pluto. And I did something so stupid, I can't believe I did it. I turned to him, and I said, Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house? And old Dave looked me right in the eye, and he said, it's beautiful. And I didn't know it for several hours, but that was my bottom. That's as far as I'm going. I lost the respect of a 16-year-old kid. And when I sat on that screen porch of that dump on the beach where I was living that evening and watched, which is still today the most beautiful sunset that I ever saw, I realized that I had given up my own self-respect a long time ago. Clint used to talk about nickel and diming himself to death. When I first heard him, when I was new, I heard him talking about, that's what I did all my life. I surrendered everything that I ever liked about myself for the privilege of drinking booze. And I got up from that couch where I was sitting. I went in the bedroom and I dug out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and that wonderful literature person of yours who did such a fantastic job. Boy, there ought to be more literature people like that in AA who make it clear about the book and the whole thing. It was great. And she was telling me about that book. And listen, I'll tell you, steal the goddamn book if you want to. You'll read it. You'll get honest. But I read that book for 3 days and three nights. I read it all, if you knew. I read all the stories. I read the appendix in the end. And in the second edition of the big book, there was a story called The Professor and the Paradox. It's not in the book anymore. But he was another egotistical school teacher. And he saved my life. He rang my bell. And on the third time through the book, on the 13th of January, 1970, which is my sobriety date, if he wasn't driving home, I'd give him a lot more than that. On the 13th of January, 1970, 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on page 63 again. And if you're new, on page 63, there's a little prayer, and that prayer is step 3. I've always called it the formal terms of surrender. And I knelt down. God, here's that pattern, Don, on this linoleum floor that had exactly the same pattern as this one here. They're about the same as clean, too. I knelt down on that linoleum floor in that dump of the beach where I was living, and I read that prayer in the book out loud to myself. I read, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And before I was 4 years old, I had built a prison. I don't know what the psychological reason for that was. I could surmise if you'd like me to. I guess I built a wall to keep you out. And all I ever did was build a prison to keep me in. And that's where I had lived all my life, in that prison. Peggy Martin in Nebraska says, alcoholism is the only prison where the locks are on the inside. And we have 12 keys to let us out. 12 keys. And my sponsor told me, since you're a brilliant intellectual, we numbered them for you. 1, 2. And I read that prayer out loud to myself, and I had a spiritual experience. You don't have to have this kind. I've only met 7 or 8 others. It was nothing like Bill Wilson had, no big deal. I just knew I was going to be all right. 2 years ago in the grapevine, this little girl who's 22 years old, and she's 7 years sober, and she wrote an article in the grapevine. And she was in this treatment center, and she knelt down and read the prayer out loud herself as I had. And I'd been looking for like 31 years to tell people what happened to me. And this 22-year-old girl, who I got to meet when I was in Cincinnati and hug and kiss, she said, I was enveloped by a great laughing love. Whoa.
There it is. That's what happened to me. And about three nights later, I was in a meeting of AA, and some guy was talking, and I went, ha! What was that? You know. It was like stitches tearing in my stomach, you know? For maybe 7 or 8 or 10 years, the only way I could laugh was like, no, that's if you fell down and got hurt. And I went, ha! Oh, I loved it. I've been laughing ever since. I love the laughter of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't live without it. I like meetings like this where people are laughing, where people shake your hand when you come in the door. But there's about 8 people come up and greet us tonight. Well, they greeted me. They ignored him. I don't blame them. Isn't he a peppy talker? He's my best buddy. I can make fun of him if I want to. He and I have a lot in common. See, we sponsor all these young guys, these horny young guys, you know. They all have relationship problems. I tell them, I've been married 52 years. What the hell do I know about a relationship? So Don and I talk about important things on these trips, like prostates and things like that. We both have little black books, but they're filled with doctors, you know. But anyway, I'm on my knees there, and I surrender, and I knew what I had to do. I had to go to this little guy named Bill Blake's house. He's dead now, 12 years. He was my sponsor for 20 years, and I went to his house. He'd always try to help me when I'd come to AA. Do you have any of those fanatics around here, you slippers losers? You know, they come and say, you want to go here? Don't try to help me. I'm smirking now. And so anyway, I went right to his house. He lived right around the corner from where I had been living. And I knocked on the door, and I told you what kind of loser I was. An arrogant, overeducated, pompous ass loser. And Margie, Bill's wife, opened the door and saw me on the porch. You knew people listening. I have never seen anyone so glad to see me in my life. Can you imagine this loser? She went, oh, Cliff, oh, Cliff, in the house I go. Pours me a cup of coffee. Oh, this is wonderful. She said, Bill's been nuts lately. He's had nobody to work with. Oh, this is so great. And then Bill comes in, Cliff! Hey, Cliff! About a half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I can do to help you folks out? Be glad to help any way I can. You know, they made me feel like Cliff's here. We can start AA now. You know. And 3 weeks later, I was in a newcomer meeting, and one of the other newcomers said to the leader, what the hell do you mean by this is a selfish program? When the guy asked the question, I knew the answer. See, I found it out the night I got here. They were glad for me. They'd been praying for me for 5 years. But Bill and Margie knew the great secret. You can't have it unless you give it away. You can't keep this thing unless you give it away. My little sponsor had a theory that everybody who comes to AA has alcoholism, will take care of that. And that everybody who comes to AA has their own particular kind of, ooh, you know. And we have the cure for it. He said the 12 steps, there's a wrench that fits every nut. That we can take care of individual things too. But he believed that everybody who comes to AA has some kind of a gift. Something you can do well that will make the program better. And I believe it. He made a believer out of me. I believe that to the marrow of my bones. That's what that little man taught me. He was the worst speaker in the history of AA. He used to say, I've talked everywhere at AA once. Oh, it was awful. Never got out of World War II. Oh, no, one time he bought a watch. And he was right in the middle of World War II, and the watch went ding, ding. He says, oh, then I got sober. But you put my sponsor, Bill, in the front seat of a car with a newcomer. He was magic. You could not escape him. He was absolute magic. He just couldn't do it up in front of people. He was the greatest. When he died, there were like 700 people came to the meeting we had for him. People from all over California and everywhere else. That little man had made such a difference in people's lives. I got to lead the meeting. I said, when we started, I said, how many of you here loved Bill? And 700 hands shot in the air. I said, how many of you here had a resentment against Bill? 700 hands. Bill never had a resentment. He was a carrier. nicest thing he said to me for the rest of his life was, "Shut up." I told him, "I have degrees, you know." He says, "So does a thermometer. You know where they stick that sometimes." I thought the first step was, shut up and get in the car. No, after 32 years of sobriety and everything, I realize now that the first step is, shut up and get in the car. A guy I sponsor is a big shot stockbroker. And this company he was working for has been jiving him around. He felt like, and he was calling about every other day, swearing and cursing these rotten people he was working for, and I'm going to get them, and this guy stepped, So all of a sudden, a couple of weeks ago, he called. He's real fun. "How are you, Cliff?" I said, "Boy, you sound good. What happened to you?" He said, "Well, I decided to shut up and get in the car." It just takes care of everything if you just shut up and get in the car. And he took me to a meeting everywhere. We went to L.A. twice a week. We went to San Diego twice. We went to Laguna once a week. You know, just shut up. I thought everybody went to a meeting every night for 2 years. That's what happened to me. He took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. And he was so cruel to me, you cannot believe it. He was so cruel. When he was dying, in the hospital, you know, he had emphysema for you smokers. Terrible way to die. He's lying there, and I had to go to Alaska to talk. So I leaned over the bed. I said, "Bill, I have to go to Alaska. I'm going to be gone for 4 days. He says, "Yeah." He said, they called. I told them to send you as far away as possible. Right to the end. But all these other guys came after him. He was cruel to everybody. I remember there were four of us, but we were all 15, 20 years sober, walking at the Southern California Convention. We're all walking down the hallway, and Bill's voice says, "Hey, dummy!" And all four of us turned around. When I was new, you're probably like this. When I was new, I've always known what was wrong with me. I've always known. I knew it when I was four, and I've known it all my life. My problem has always been I was not loved enough. And thank you, honey. You sound like you're volunteering. Oh, she's leaving. That's something that went along, was it? I'm driving them out of here tonight. I was raised in that alcoholic family, and I never saw it all my life. A lot of people tried to love me. Certainly my wife did, and my kids, and a lot of my students and people through the years, but I never saw that. See, but my little sponsor knew what was the matter with me. He never told me. He never told me what was the matter with me because he knew I was too stupid or too brilliant. What's the difference? You're just as dead. He knew what my problem had always been. I never loved enough. I never loved at all. I didn't know how to start to learn to begin how to love. How can you learn to love when you live in that prison? So he did what every intelligent sponsor I know does. He made me take loving actions against my better judgment. He made me go and greet people like these people did with us here tonight. "Hi there." You know, I hated that because I'm a real snob. You know, "Hi, what's your name?" Like I really get. We used to have wall talkers when I got sober. The guys that drank too long. You remember the guys who sit in the back and go, "Hey, how you doing?" You know, as soon as the meeting was there, "Go talk to the wall talker." Oh, Jesus, I hated that. I'd go back there and say, "How are you tonight, Hag?" "Yeah, you're real good." And there was this guy, Al, who was a worse loser than me. He was a 10-year loser. I was only a 5-year loser. And he didn't have a driver's license. So whatever was wrong in my life, I had to go get Al and take him somewhere. And I hated Al. He's a big blowhard jerk. And so I would do all this loving action after loving action after loving action. Funny thing was, one night when I'm at the door and you were coming in, I remembered your name. And when I asked you how you were, I wanted to know. And I used to sometimes sit and look at the wall talker and think, you know, that guy's saving a lot of lives here. I see what's happened to him. That could happen to me if I go back out there again. That guy was a hell of an example for me. And, and I got mopping floors and all this stuff, and I just started becoming a part of. Al drank. He had almost a year again, and he had been such a loser. And he's like 11 days away from a year, and he drank again.
Guess who he called? He called me. And I went to help him. And we were on the couch. He was crying and carrying on. I said, come on, get a shower out. Come on, put your clothes on. We'll go to a meeting tonight. It's one day at a time, pal. Come on, one day at a time. You're going to go tonight. And before I knew what I was saying, it came out of my mouth. I said, I love you, Al. I knew it was true. I don't know if Al even heard me, but I knew it was true. I wanted Al to be sober as much as I want to be sober myself. And you new people here tonight, that's how we feel about you. We want you to be sober as much as we want to be sober ourselves, because if we don't get you sober, we may not stay sober either. See, that's the magic of this thing. If I try to give it to you and you don't get it, I'm still sober. So anyway, Al sobered up, and we became this dynamite 12-step team, Al and I. We'd 12-step the world. In those days, you used to get 3, 4, 5 calls a week. And we used to do the good guy, bad guy, you know, like cops. We always getting fist fights out in front. It's my turn to be the good guy. No, and we'd go in there, one guy would say, you're going to shut your mouth, quit your whining, get your ass to meeting. The other guy would say, never mind him. Come here. I'm going to talk. We 12-stepped the world. And I grew to love newcomers. First people I ever remember loving for fun and for free. I loved newcomers. And then one night Clancy was talking and he said, treat your kids like newcomers. All those dope fiends. And I went home and knelt down and I turned my kids over to God. My God. My higher power. And my higher power has done a remarkable job with my children. My youngest son, Chris, has 14 years of sobriety and just a magnificent guy. Our middle daughter, Jan, had 12 years and got a bad back, and they were giving her pills, and so she drank. Now she has 2 years again, and she's just doing fantastic. Cured her back with yoga, by the way. And she belongs to my home group, and we go to the meeting every Thursday night together. And our eldest daughter kind of went wrong. She's been in Al-Anon about 17 years. I like to tease Al-Anons, but I'm not an Al-Anon basher, I'll guarantee you that. My wife is one of the greatest examples of the power in the steps I've ever seen, and my daughter Kitty's the same way. They took those same 12 steps we take, and they put them in their lives, and that's the program if you're new tonight. That's the program. The program is 1 through 12. If you haven't done the steps, you're not on the program. That is the program. A lot of people like to talk about them and meditate on them and put them in their navel, but I think you ought to work them. Well, my time's up. But I want to tell you then, our youngest daughter was only 7 when we got here, so she just grew up straight in a crooked family. She's just fine. Has always been fine. Comes to everybody's cakes. Good night. I know. The hashish salesman is the vice president of an international corporation. He was an agriculture major. I don't ask him what he grows. None of my goddamn business. he did his Peace Corps in Colombia. year ago March, I was invited to go up and speak at a little roundup up in Hood River, Oregon, where I gave my eldest son his one-year cake. And he called me a couple of weeks ago. He was on his way to a GSR meeting. I cried for 2 hours. People used to ask me when I was in service, you know, I've been delegate and the whole thing. They said, why do you spend all your time in service? I say, because I want my program to be here for my kids if they need it. I want it to be the program that little electrician gave to me. I want it to be those steps in his spiritual way of life. I don't want people watering it down and psychologizing it and mixing it in with a lot of other crap. I want it to be AA. And by God, all that service I did paid off because it was here for my kids, and now my son's at GSR. If you're new tonight, you don't have to believe all this good stuff's going to happen to you. You don't have to believe that at all. I couldn't believe it. I believed it happened to Bill. But you do have to believe something. You do have to believe it happened to me, that a sick, crazy, angry goof lives every day of his life happy, joyous, and free, just like that book promised me. That's how I live, and I hope you do too.